jump up, let's get crazy. Jump up, let's get crazy. Welcome to the Round 5 Supercoach Coach Podcast. My name's Marcus, and this week I'm joined by Dunny.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
And Bryce joining us back for the show as well, mate. Welcome back.
G'day, back again. The Rocky Fan Club's back in the house.
Oh, gosh. forget between either Mark and yourself. I'm in for permanent punishment. It's not helping that he's pumping out 140s at the moment. You seem pretty cheery, Bryce. So why don't you start us off with a personal update on how your team went on the weekend?
So I think the last time I was on was a couple of weeks ago. So I went down in ranking and then back up again. So I had a reasonable week this week, despite having Fife on the bench and being replaced by Butters on field. I still managed to score 22-71, and that was largely due to the fact I took Grundy's VC of 160 and Billings really managed to bring me home with 126, which I was pretty happy with. Also had Rocky, Whitfield. I've still got Heaney in my side. Had Cripps 160, and Brodie Smith was pretty handy in the back line with a 104. So that kind of helped the pain of having a 23 on field from Butters and managed to avoid Setterfield and Petrocelli on field. So I'm sitting at about 4,415 in the rankings. So in a good position to launch into the season. Still used zero trades.
Very nice, Bryce, especially the zero trades part. Dunny, how about you, mate?
Yeah, I so wish I'd only used zero trades as well, because I've only made one and it was the worst trade I could have made. So I did the Heaney to Kelly trade after round two, which, as Marcus and I were just talking pre-show, was the logical thing to do at the time. And it has backfired massively on me. Regular listeners of the show would know that a couple of years ago I had the curse of the podcast. Every time I came on, I had a rubbish score. Well, it seems to be back. I only had the 2087 this week, and one of the guys I want to trade out, Dunkley, with his 73, was actually my top scorer in the forward line, which is really poor. So I landed Dangerfield 66 like everyone else, but yeah, Tim Kelly's 39. I had Parker on field for his 32 and Setterfield with his 54. In the midfield, I copped Treloar's 83, which didn't help, and Crouch's 90, which hurt. And in the back line, Darcy Moore with his 65 and Clark with his 53. But look, overall, I do have a bit of cash in the bank that I'm planning to potentially use this week and still got 29 trades. So it's not all doom and gloom. I did manage to get the Grundy VC as well, which I was pretty happy about. But yeah, these things happen. You can't help a tag or an injury. So see how we go. How'd you go, Marcus?
Yeah, a little bit better, mate. I do want to say sort of commiserations, because I know Faz made that Heaney to Kelly trade too. And we actually got a question about that trade and the advice at that point in time. And I think credit that you've identified it, Dunny, but like it seemed like a pretty sensible thing to do. Heaney had an ankle injury. That week they were talking about him not doing any training. And then that week Kelly has a ripping first half and then goes down with an ankle injury himself. And then on return gets tagged by the informed tagger in De Boer, you know, while he's still got a bit of a sore ankle. So really unfortunate, but he should bounce back and not sort of burn you as much on the Heaney trade. It's the Heaney out that kind of stings a bit with a couple of 130s in a row more than anything else. But I think even the most optimistic of coaches wouldn't have expected that in the following two rounds. So hopefully it doesn't burn you too much moving forward, Dunny. And the podcast curse lifts, because I don't want to scare you off from coming on the show, mate. I made my first trade for the season, trading out Dusty Martin for Travis Boak. It was Boak v. Kelly.
Good trade.
And I was pretty worried about picking Boak and passing on Kelly, and that could not have turned out better after only 1 week on my flip side of the coin. Sorry to say, Dunny.
No, that's good, mate. No, I'm always happy to see Rocky and Boak go really well, even if they're not in my side. Don't worry.
It's the comedy festival on in Melbourne at the moment, and I embarrassingly did not take up the free loophole opportunity with Gibbons and Butters, which I'm very much kicking myself over. I had the free loophole with Fife and Scott, but I decided just to put the E on Gibbons and play Butters, and Butters scored 23, so I gave up about 30 points for no reason there. And I played Clark over Scrimshaw as well for a loss of another 40 points. So scored 21.97 and could have been sort of 22.70 if I had picked the rookies right. So not the worst round, considering Dunkley scored 73, Clayton Oliver scored 87, Zach Williams scored 60. I had some unique players that didn't quite go to plan there. Yeah, not too bad. And as to your point, Dunny, not all doom and gloom because I've got the 29 trades as well and looking to attack the remaining rounds. It's crazy to think that three rounds in, there's only two trades used between three of us, but must mean some things are going okay. Rank-wise, I moved into the top 15K, so moved up a little bit. And overall, our leagues have started to make some upward movement. I think some of that is due to Billings as well, coming pretty good over the last few rounds. Him representing a probably disproportionate amount of Supercoach coaches. But we've got 13 now in the top 100 leagues overall, including the second ranked league at the moment. So starting to make some upward movement on the league ladder. In terms of a quick group update, our public group is led by Matthew's team, Hugh McLovin, with his score 22.81, pushing him into 78th. And for our Patreon group, the top scorer for the week was Blues 1970 with his score of 23.94. So big week for him. Unfortunately, doesn't unseat our top scoring round so far, which was Darren's team from last week when he scored 25.27. He's still sitting at the top of the Patreon group overall, sitting 64th. So still in the front running for both the Patreon group prizes. And don't forget, if you want to get involved in our Patreon group or get some bonus content, you can sign up at patreon.com/supercoach. And with that, let's get into some questions. The first one here is about a player who just copped a suspension. This question is from Daniel Manchin from Facebook, and he's asking about Setterfield. He's copped 2 weeks for a quality tackle while Dusty got a week for King hitting a bloke. Do we trade Setterfield now or trade the MRP for a bag of potatoes? What do you guys reckon? His scoring hasn't been that great. He's gone up to 194K and he's going to stall a little bit in price. His break even's also 22. So, if he keeps the sort of average up, he doesn't have a huge amount of upside. But having said that, I mean, you're only going to net about 80K from that downgrade. It's not optimal. Where are you sitting on that, Bryce?
Yeah, it's a tough one. I think I'd take option two to trade the MRP out for a bag of potatoes, but maybe that's not a realistic option for the show. But just on the Setterfield out part of the trade, I'm inclined to probably hold him for a little while at this stage. He's got a 37 from not the week that just went, but the week before. So once that goes out of his price cycle, he can hopefully rise a little bit more, make a 50 to 60K more in about 4 weeks' time, and then he'll be ready for culling.
Dunny, what about you, mate? What do you reckon with Setterfield as a potential trade out this week?
Look, I agree with a lot of what Bryce just said there, mate. I think using him as a loophole over the next couple of weeks wouldn't be the worst thing. I know something yourself and Mark have talked about in the past is the value of a trade. Now, he's only made us $48,000 at the moment. And I forget, what's the value you guys normally put on a trade?
About 150.
Yeah, at the moment, given, as Bryce said, his break-even should change a bit in the next week or so, he's still going to make a bit more money. I'm inclined to actually hold him and deal with other issues first. He's not going to change in price. He's not going to drop this week or next week. And, yeah, if you can use him to loophole someone on the field, it might be worthwhile doing that. But obviously everyone's circumstances are different. But at the moment, I'll potentially be holding him.
And the reason we go for 150 is ideally you want to do a downgrade together with an upgrade, and with every two trades bring in an additional premium. And in order to do that, you need to net a certain amount of cash in order to make that upgrade, or just get really lucky with a bloke that's dropped down a lot in price because he got concussed on a six or whatever the case may be. But for most instances, if you got two blokes who are at 250K, and you can trade down to even a basement rookie at 100K, you're going to be able to net 150K from each trade. So you tack on 150 onto a 250K player and you've got yourself 400K. Now, as most people look at their own teams and realize that premiums cost way more than 400K, you can understand why that would be considered almost the bare minimum to consider an upgrade. Because if you're going for any less than that, you're really going to struggle to hit a premium with two trades. And ultimately, especially once we get into the upgrading rhythm, you're going to need to do that every single week to stay with the pack because everybody else will be trying to bring in a premium every single week. Now, the strategy is slightly different early on in the season, where if you make a trade now to bring out a sort of underpriced rookie, you're not paying the price in terms of not being able to bring a premium in, because not enough rookies have appreciated enough in price to start that upgrade cycle. So you could argue that if you wanted to net an additional 100K, put it in your back pocket and have that available for the upgrade season, that that's not the worst strategy in the world. Having said that, if you saw Setterfield potentially having a big game down the track, getting up to 300K, he has that mid-forward flexibility. He can be a loophole player. I also see enough reasons to hold on to him. So conservatively, I'm going to hold on to him. And potentially, you know, a bloke like Bolter is a guy who I'm more likely to trade out. He's bloody scored 21 points across three rounds. I mean, God damn it, Bolter, you went down in price. Like, how is that possible? Oh, God, frustrating. Very frustrating. Now, he's a guy where if you saw him basically not doing anything even while he's playing games, then you could argue, well, if he's essentially a dead rookie, probably even worse, because at least with a player that's not playing, you could loophole him, then you might consider trading a Bolter type. But a Setterfield who you know is going to come back, who could still score decently and go up to about the 300 mark, you'd probably hold on to him. What do you gents reckon about Bolter?
I'm just pretty happy I don't own him, to be honest, Marcus. But,
thanks, mate.
I agree with Danny because I don't have him either.
Oh, gosh.
Look, I think, you know, Bolter's a bit different to Setterfield. Setterfield has been scoring well and he can score well, and he had that one poor score which has affected his break-even. Bolter, on the other hand, he's not even going to get close to making you that 100, 150, I don't think, not on what we've seen currently anyway. So you could be excused for trading him out, but it's one of those almost wasted trades. What do you think on that one, Bryce?
Well, I guess you need someone that's worthwhile trading in that's going to make you the cash that you need. So I don't know whether there's too many forward rookies, but you might be able to use some DPP swings and bring someone in like a whore who's on the bubble this week. I mean, dead rookies that are playing and scoring 30 aren't much use for your cash generation. That's what we need to do in order to head towards a premium side. So I guess, well, I mean, you could give him one more game, see what he's like, maybe turn the corner, get a different role. Richmond have got a few injuries at the moment, so maybe they'll throw him around to find him something that's going to net his Supercoach score a little bit better. But yeah, I wouldn't be angry at anyone for trading him out and starting again and getting a rookie in that's going to make some money.
Now, before we go into the potential trade-in options, we've got a question here from Alistair Clark from Facebook asking which lambs are ready for the slaughtering. So I briefly mentioned that it's a bit too early generally to be starting the upgrade cycle because rookies haven't appreciated enough in cash. So for context, right, we've had two price increases and that's just why. Generally, you want at least three, and even then it feels a little bit early. It's not till you tend to get to your fourth or fifth price increase that the upgrades really start in earnest. Dunny, from your point of view, are there any other players apart from Bolter types that you might consider trading out?
Just having a quick look at my side, the only one who's even close to that would be, and I'm just playing the break-even game really, would be Butters, whose break-even is 48. I mean, he's made 80-odd thousand, but he's got this 23 sitting in his cycle now, which is going to hinder his cash generation for the next 2 weeks. But once that drops out again, if he can go back to his 60s and 70s, then he's going to keep going. So I'd be inclined to hold him as well. But I don't think there's anyone who's really screaming out to be cut at the moment.
I tend to agree. There's no guys that are absolutely screaming to be traded out, and their break even is well beyond their average. You can find with rookies at the start of the year and every year, the scores will fluctuate a lot. So you'll have a few good scores, and what we've seen this week is a lot of crap scores. And sometimes we just need to be patient to see those lower scores out of their price cycle so they can start generating their cash again. What you don't want to do with every rookie you get in is as soon as there's a bad score, their break even will go up, you trade them out and you make 80K. If you do that with every rookie, then you're not going to make enough money to get your team to full premium, especially if you started to do some luxury trades, some more than two or three correctional trades at the start of the season. So at this point in the season, you probably just need to be a little bit patient and see past this week where we saw a number of poor scores. I think there's six or seven below 45. So it's a pretty interesting round, and it seems to be happening in our forward line as well. So hopefully it'll be a little bit better next week and we can reassess.
Yeah, we had a few questions asking about sort of creative ways to make cash with the rookies doing so poorly, and whether or not you could burn trades to bring in cash early. So I just caution against that for anyone considering anything like that. The best way to earn more money is not to burn trades on sort of suboptimal cash grabs. It's to actually try and maximize the amount of cash that you're going to make from each trade. The way you do that is to be somewhat patient. Butters at 240 has the potential to be a 350K rookie. Like, I'd be fairly surprised if he doesn't get there by the halfway mark of the season. So you ride out this 23, you wait for him to have some good scores, and then you trade him out at a higher point. That's how you're going to force more cash into your side, by being patient, not trading into rookies that didn't make the team at the start of the year and that are a little bit more risky because of that. And the other thing to consider is when trading out these types, you've also got to consider we haven't started upgrading yet. So anybody you bring on as a replacement for Butters is probably playing on field. Like, Butters is playing on field for many people. And yes, his average looks bad after 23, but before that, he was actually looking like a pretty good rookie to have on field. If you trade in a whore, a stack, whoever that candidate may be, you just need to keep in mind that if you don't think that they're going to score more than the potential bloke that you're going to trade out, you are paying that cost in points on top of any potential loss cash generation in order to inject cash into your side quick. So if you can find a way to use the cash from the downgrade this week, if you can do Setterfield down to a rookie and you can use that 100K to take somebody up to a Travis Boak, let's say, or to a Lachie Neale, yes, go for it. Do it, because you're at least converting that cash into points the week you're doing that downgrade. But if you're not, if it's just sitting in your bank, there's no real point to doing it, because next week might not be time to start upgrading yet either. And you've essentially downgraded to a rookie that's a little bit more risky just to sit on 100K in your bank for 3 weeks, which isn't particularly useful. I think that ties quite nicely to the trade-ins question regarding the rookies. And this one's from Richie Younger on Facebook. Are any of the rookies who could be on the bubble this week worth bringing in? And there's actually quite a few. There's Hoare, Rotham, Lockhart, Stack, and there's a couple in the rucks, Riley O'Brien and Clark and Sparrow. Now, it's a bit early to have bloody seven rookies on the bubble. You'd be hoping for them in sort of another couple of weeks' time. But do you think any of them sort of stand out in terms of that potential trade-in for Bolter?
Hoare obviously scored really well this week after being recalled to the side, but he was a late-in, remember. So not sure how secure his spot is. I'm actually a Hoare owner because I held him from the start, so I'm pretty happy with his score on the weekend. Yeah, Stack was one that was talked about a lot, and his score really sort of came back to the pack with a 40 on the weekend. None of the others are really saying that we should really be jumping on them, to be honest. What do you think, Bryce?
I think they've all got question marks over them. You mentioned the Hoare job security issue. He was only a late in, and there's others that are not playing in the current side that could come in. He could lose his spot, but if he continues to play well, he could certainly keep his spot, but it'd be a bit of a risk trying to bring him in. Sydney Stack, I don't mind the look of. I think his job security could be okay, but that 40 concerns me a little bit. Is that going to be his normal scoring potential, or is it going to be towards more the 108 or somewhere in between? I think that if he was to average 55 from a base price, he could make enough money for us. So I don't mind him, but you need some guys that are ready to trade out. So that's what makes it really tricky this week. The one I've actually been liking more the look of is actually Riley O'Brien. So he's a 136K. He's scored 85 and 84 in his first two games. So scoring-wise, I think he's a really good choice. But the job security of him with Source Jacobs coming back, I think he might be coming back this week or next. So there'd always be a concern that you bring him in and then he sits on the bench for you. And you'd be hoping he gets enough games to make enough money. The 150 mark Which he has the potential to do, but it might be a bit of a slow burn if he's in and out of the side. And Adelaide might prefer Source Jacobs as the option there. If Jacobs was to go down with a bit of an injury or he's going to be out a bit longer, I really like him as option because he can make up to 200K in 4 weeks by scoring at about 85. I don't mind him. The other one on the bubble is Zach Clark, but his scoring potential doesn't seem to be very high. And it's always tricky with rookies to bring them in. Unless you have like a Bynes that you can swing to your forward line and bring in a ruck rookie, it's probably a little bit limited in being able to do it for most teams. But if Riley O'Brien had a bit more of a job security, I'd be looking to shift Bynes into the forward line, bring Riley O in, and just have him sitting on the bench and making some money.
Would you consider Bynes to an O'Brien or Clark?
Probably not. I'd probably want to bring that ruck forward loophole player back into my side, so it seems like it's two trades to make it happen. I'm pretty keen to retain Bynes for the whole season, unless there was a really good reason to get rid of him. I don't see that Riley O'Brien's a good enough reason to do it.
How about Josh Rotham? He actually scored 98 points on the weekend, so I know a few people are looking at him with pretty wide eyes. Plays as a defender, 193 centimetres, so an athletic tall. Has come in for Liam Duggan to replace him in the back line. Duggan is likely to get back this week. He's listed as a test on the injury list last week, and so this week you'd think he's a decent chance to get back in. I suppose if he's named and Duggan makes his way back into the team, that'd be at least a pretty decent signal.
West Coast play on Friday night at home against Port Adelaide.
Thoughts on Jay Lockhart? Again, another basement price player like Stack, available as a defender and as a midfielder, but it's actually been playing as essentially a small forward in Melbourne's team. His scoring has just been fine, 32, 57, nothing to write home about. But that basement price plus the flexibility of pivoting potentially with a Dersma type, does that sort of interest anyone at all?
My concern with him was that I believe he was dropped one of the laid outs, or was he injured? I can't remember.
I think it was an injury.
Oh, it was an injury, was it? But still, I'm not really sold on him, to be honest.
Yeah, I think that job security could be an issue with him, and also the scoring potential doesn't really scream out to me. And that DPP flexibility is nice, but it's not enough reason to bring him in for me.
Now, if we had to sort of name a top three, one, two, three, in terms of rookie trade-in options this week, how would you rate them?
For me, and all teams are going to be different, Marty Hawes probably my number one, and all very close, Sydney Stack to Rotham 3, and hanging out for the one game as Jack Ross looks good to me as my fourth option.
I was going to go fairly similar there, mate. I already have Hall, but I would definitely have put him at number one, mainly for the fact that he's that mature age. I'm not sure why he was dropped originally, but I reckon he's probably done enough to get back in. I also like Sydney Stack. The other reason I really like him is that 102. He's just that little bit cheaper than everyone else as well. So if you compare, if you want to think, well, do I bring him in? Do I bring a Rotham in? I know they're in different positions, but for that one trade, you're already making 20K on Stack. But Stack and Rotham at number 2/3. And similarly, I also want to see what Jack Ross can do this week because he could be my first downgrade in the midfield if he has a good game next week. Just on your Riley O'Brien talk before, if you were going to do it for a Bynes to an O'Brien on the bench, that's effectively a trade that you're never going to bring that player on field, and then you'd need to make another trade to your ruck bench later on in the season to actually harvest that cash. I don't like making that many trades on players I'm never going to put on field.
And you're essentially making zero. We actually have to upgrade Bynes to Riley O'Brien. So in order to bring him in, you're investing another 30K into him, and you won't get that back until you downgrade him again, like you said, Dunny. So it's, not really appealing to me.
Yeah, look, I don't actually hate the move. I don't see myself doing it, mostly because of the cash involved to upgrade to him. But if you've got a lot of cash sitting around, don't hate it if you are concerned about cash generation in general, especially if you're going to keep a set of field type. You know, they're going to be rookies that continue to be captaincy loophole options moving forward. Bolter probably will get dropped and be that option too. So I don't hate it, but overall I do agree. I definitely caution against it because it's a potentially null trade. But if you're sort of laughing like Bryce price is and swanning around in the top 10,000 with zero trades used, maybe that's something you might consider. For me, if I were to rank them, I think I'd actually go Stack first, just his price point. And I know he scored a 40 in the second round, but the fact that he scored so well in the first round indicates he has that high scoring potential. And hopefully Richmond continue to turn their form around so the Bolter Stack types can get some free points without having to earn too many hard balls themselves. And then I'd go Hoare second and third being Rotham. Just keep in mind that there is risk attached to all these rookies. I don't think any of us are very certain about all of them. They didn't make the round one teams for a reason, and they've largely come in due to sort of injuries or poor form, pushing others out the side, but their spots could still be under threat moving forward. But just something to keep in mind. As we were talking about the trade out targets, we did sort of emphasize that you'd really only be looking to make this move if you had a dead rookie, probably. So your decision might be largely formed by who you have available in the position that you're looking to trade out a rookie from. Now, onto a question from SamKent97 on Twitter. Would you go early on a rookie like a Jordan Ridley type if it meant that you could bring in a premium? So this I see a little bit more value for in terms of making a quick upgrade. If you didn't think that you were going to get a huge amount more points from having one of these expensive starting rookies, a couple more were sort of brought up in terms of James Cousins as another example, and you had cash to bring in a premium, that seems like a trade I wouldn't mind going early on because you're netting points straight away from the week you make the trade.
Yeah, I don't mind that one either. Marcus, I agree with what you're saying there. Yeah, if you've got some cash sitting in the bank and you can do that Ridley trade and bring someone in who is going to score, because what's Ridley worth at the moment? I just can't find him at the minute.
265.
265, yeah. So, yeah, if you can go him down to one of these guys who's sitting at 115 or 120, you're going to net some cash there. You've got a bit of cash in the bank. Then you can go and upgrade. Yeah, that's what we want to do. You're making 150K out of that trade and it works if you need to plug a hole on field. It does make sense.
Yeah, I'm pretty supportive of that move as well. The only thing that I'd want to consider if I'm doing the one up, one down with Ridley, if you're trading two players which are on field, so maybe you're trading a Ridley and a Moore, and you're downgrading Ridley to a Rotham and you're upgrading a Moore to a premium such as Whitfield, you've got to realise that you're now bringing that player you traded in onto your field. You might be upgrading one player and getting more points on field. You might be downgrading the points you're getting from the other player. So I'd want to consider that part of the trade as well, the points that that new player, that downgrade would get, and whether he pivots to the bench and you got someone else that can come on, such as a Collins or a Clark, and is that combination actually going to be more beneficial, or should you wait a couple more weeks so that you can get a better rookie, or there might be better options that present themselves. So I've got Ridley at the moment in my back line along with a few other mid-price types, Brody Smith, Pierce Hanley. So the temptation for me is to just combine a couple of those mid-prices and high-priced rookies, bring in a premium, bring in a low-priced rookie and continue on. But I'm concerned about that other player of the equation, and that actually brings down the points of my field. And I'm cutting away my cash generation of a couple of those players as well. I see them still making some cash and still being pretty solid on field with job security and point scoring. So in my case, I'm holding Ridley and Moore at this stage.
I think I would really only be moving if you already had cash, or you know, mentioned it before. If you could do that downgrade from Setterfield to Stack, reasonably confident in Stack, for example, then making that upgrade up could be beneficial. All right, next question. This one's from @SlaterNader11, and he's saying that with a lot of the rookies struggling with cash generation, is this the year to think outside the square? And he posted a picture of Max Gawn to Shane Mumford. So very controversial trading out a bloke who's averaging 110 for the season so far. Now, personally, I do think that's a little bit too far outside the square. Yeah,
it is a little bit extreme. I mean, Max Gawn is probably going to be one of the top two rucks at the end of the year, so you probably want to bring him back in. Will Mumford rise to that price after you bring him in. You probably need to make a bit of an upgrade of a rookie as well and put money on top of Munford in order to get to Gawn. So you're basically using two trades to potentially make 150K. I've seen another scenario out there rather than the max Gawn to Munford, but maybe you started a different ruck to Gawn, so like a McAvoy or a Goldie or a Martin or a Witz, and you're going to have to make that trade anyway from one of those players to Gawn at some point. I don't mind the idea of going one of those players down to Mumford and then riding Mumford up until the buys, cashing in on him, because he should make about the 150 mark if he keeps going at his current average, and then at the buys, trade him out, use some rookie cash to get him up to Gawn and have Gawn in your side for post-buy. So you're basically using Munford in order to get from Goldie to Gawn and actually making some money along the way. So I don't mind that as an option.
Yeah, if we look at their averages so far, Gawn's averaging 9 points more than Munford at the moment. And, Mumford does have that tendency to whack blokes or lay them out into the middle of the turf. So, he could actually get himself suspended at some point. I think if you had a Goldie or a Martin, you'd certainly look at it, but not Max.
We have a question here from Aurelius Maximus, one of our patrons, asking whether Mumford is a legitimate option and considering he has Tim English. Now, I think if you had an English type who started at a similar price point at the start of the season, he seems like a pretty easy side swap. Otherwise, I generally agree with you guys that Gawn to Mumford is way too risky. I would still say that even Goldie or McAvoy to Mumford still carries a certain level of risk. I would still caution against that, remembering that if you have an issue in your rucks, you need to trade to get a player on field in a lot of cases. If you had a O'Brien or a Zach Clark type, then potentially the Goldie McAvoy to Mumford trade would be more attractive. If you did not have ruck cover, I definitely would not be moving a premium to a risky mid-pricer like Mumford. Mumford is even sort of at that stage in his career where he might not have anything wrong with him and they might just rest him because they might want to use him for the final series. So just something to keep in mind there.
And I think we're assuming with his first couple of games is that's what the scoring is going to maintain if you brought him in. And I think that carries a bit of risk as well. So he's gone 91, 111, which is pretty good numbers. But if he starts to dip below to the 90 mark, you're not actually probably going to make enough money to make that kind of move worthwhile.
All right, next section that we're going to go to, overrated versus underrated. Now, we've already recorded for a bit, so let's go through these pretty quickly. The first one here is from @Steelmatic asking about Marshall. He has definitely surprised, managed the ton in each of his first three games after not starting the season. He's looking certainly really good in that ruck role at St. Kilda, but then again, St. Kilda are also 3-1. What do you reckon, Bryce, overrated or underrated?
Yeah, certainly didn't expect this from Marshall. So he was underrated going into the season. There's a lot of risk with this pick at this price point now. I think that if he got on when he was on the bubble at about 350, I think it was, his 340 with his starting price. So he's already gone up to 406K. So pretty much at that price, if you bring him in, you essentially need him to be a keeper. He's not going to be a stepping stone.
Well, he does come up against Big Max Gawn this week, so I'll be eagerly watching to see how he goes. Look, I agree with everything Bryce said. He was very much underrated at the start of the year. I actually wrote about him a week or so ago, and I'm like, why am I writing about this guy? Who is he? he's just someone that's come out of nowhere, and you get those players, but I don't think you can bring him in at 406 because, as Bryce said, he'd need to almost be a keeper at that point. You don't want to be using another trade there at that price point.
Yeah, I think it was slightly underrated at the previous price point. Don't necessarily think that necessarily translates to him being a great pick. At that price point, you ideally still want them to be a keeper. In the midfield, you could argue otherwise with the Rocky Libba type who have achieved those ultra primo numbers before. But with Marshall, that risk was always there. And certainly at 406K, he's definitely a bit overrated as a trade-in target. Now, next question is from @StelzaJames on Twitter. And he's asking about Zachy Williams. Overrated or underrated? So averaging 84.5 and was one of our locks during the start of the season.
Oh, the poor kid. He's come back from being a year out of the game, and he's gone 82, 95, 101, so building quite nicely. He's put out a bit of a stinker on the weekend with the 60, but, I mean, I think we can expect that a little bit from all of our players, and I think we just need to sit back for a while and let him run his course over the year. We picked him essentially as someone that was going to turn into a keeper.
He's probably appropriately rated at the moment. He's delivered in those first three games. Yeah, he had a bad game, but hey, Paddy Dangerfield had 66 on the weekend as well. So, and we're not going to jump to trade him out. We can allow him a week off. And as Bryce said, you know, he's had a year out. He's just come back into the team. He's not going to score 100 every single week.
Let's go to some quick captaincy options to wrap up this week's show. Going to start off with naming a couple as a vice captaincy options. Neil against Collingwood, who generally don't tag a heap, certainly looks like a pretty good option. His last three against Collingwood as well, 104, 106, and 140, which is pretty good. And you've got Brody Grundy as well, who scored 110, 120, and 121. So certainly decent vice-captaincy options there. Jensen, anybody else you're looking at?
No, that's right. I'm probably the only other one you might look at. Maybe Rocky on the Friday night against West Coast, but that seems reasonably risky to me because I'm not sure where Hutchings is going to go, whether he goes to Boca or to Rocky. Or if you could wait until potentially the Saturday lunchtime game, maybe take a Lockie Whitfield against Fremantle for your vice-captain.
So if Setterfield doesn't play, then the other option that you can go with is also Maxi Gawn. Mm. Now, Max against St Kilda, who I guess now they've got Marshall, but typically in the last few years haven't had many options. He's basically dominated them, 127, 128, 145. Yeah. So you might be tempted, I mean, even with Marshall doing all right, to VC Gawn there.
Yeah, Marcus, I think that's the option that I like the most at this stage, either a Max Gawn or a Grundy and using Setterfield as a loophole option. It's always a little bit dangerous using that forward line loophole, so I have to think through how that will all work. But I like running that into either a Cripps against the Bulldogs or a Matty Crouch against the Suns. The Crows are under a little bit of pressure, so I could see that one really turning out at Adelaide Oval. But, hopefully the Gawn or Grundy turn out for me.
What about running him into a danger against Hawthorn, who last year put 130 and 160 on the Hawks?
Yeah, he'd be pretty keen to turn the weekend around, especially after a loss. So I don't hate that option. The fact that danger sometimes can go quiet definitely worries me. But I guess Hawthorn haven't been sort of super hard on the tagging so far. I think ultimately I'm going to look to the Western Bulldogs Carlton game for inspiration for a captaincy option. As already mentioned, Cripps against Bulldogs, 106 and 143, his last two. McRae, he looks certainly really good against Carlton as well. His last few against them have been 110, 124, and 141. And Bontempelli, for anyone lucky enough to have him, 120, 124, and 145, his last three. So actually looks like quite a few strong options for the captaincy this week. All right, gents, that's it for this week's show. Thank you so much for coming on. For our listeners, we are recording a Patreon bonus episode with Mark tomorrow, so stay tuned to that. Otherwise, good luck for the upcoming round. Dunny, any final thoughts for the show this week, mate?
Nothing major, mate, but everyone just hang tight. Don't panic on those rookies just yet. It's only been a couple of price rises so far. Let's see how we can get another couple of weeks out of them.
Yeah, nothing more. Just don't panic and, let the rookies play out their price rises, and there'll always be more rookies. I think we get a little bit impatient. We see a couple of good ones come up and we go, we have to trade them in. But if you're not ready to downgrade someone, I think that that's fraught with danger. So just be patient. There'll be some more rookies on the horizon play the price rises and the break-evens, and you'll generate the cash you need for your premiums later in the season.
Awesome. Thanks, gents. We'll catch you next week. See ya.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.